From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the illusion of exceptions in the Texas abortion law. Can the Texas Medical Board clear up the confusion? South Texas Congressman Henry Cuellar says he's being targeted with his indictments, and a Central American teen tells his story of his journey coming to the United States. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It's becoming more clear that the Texas abortion ban is hurting health care in the state for women. When a state forces women to carry pregnancies to term, they are at least 14 times more likely to result in death than from an abortion. That's according to the 2012 study, the Comparative Study of Legal Induced Abortion and Childbirth in the United States, published by the National Institute of Health and cited over 400 times. This means abortion bans like we have in Texas forces women to risk their lives when they become pregnant. And that's because exceptions in the law to the abortion ban are confusing. In abortion ban states, patients with ectopic pregnancies, miscarriages, and excessive hemorrhaging, conditions that call for abortion care, can't be treated until fetal heartbeats disappear or patients are on the brink of death. A 2022 study published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that doctors at two Texas hospitals cited the cases of 28 women less than 23 weeks pregnant who were treated for dangerous pregnancies. The doctors noted that all of the women had recommended abortions delayed by 9 days because fetal heart activity was detected. Of those, nearly 60% developed severe complications, nearly double the number of complications experienced by patients in other states who had immediate therapeutic abortions. Currently, the Texas Medical Board is trying to provide doctors with clear guidelines to avoid these delays. But according to recent testimony, those guidelines and checklist could create even longer delays to provide treatment, making being pregnant in Texas even more dangerous. The Texas Medical Board met on Friday to consider rules to guide doctors on the exceptions in the state's abortion ban, and it voted in favor of a proposed rule that includes some changes to the original proposal, including specifying that the doctors have 7 days to document their decision to provide an abortion. The new proposed rule is posted on the Texas Medical Board's website. It will be available for public comment for a minimum of 30 days before the board can vote to finalize it. In Texas, if a doctor performs an abortion, they face life in prison and the loss of their medical license. There are exceptions to save the life and health of the mother, but confusion about that, set against those harsh penalties, has meant those exceptions really don't work. That's what Amanda Zawarski told the Texas Medical Board last month.
I nearly died as a result of being denied basic health care that I needed while I was pregnant with my desperately wanted baby.
Zawarski testified during a 5-hour public hearing over the Texas Medical Board's proposed rules that could clear up confusion among doctors about how to interpret the abortion law.
When I received the crushing news that my husband and Josh and I were going to lose our baby girl at 18 weeks, at that point, my doctor should have been able to induce labor so that I could deliver our daughter and begin healing, both physically and emotionally. But with the way the law in Texas is currently written, an induction would have been considered an illegal abortion as long as the baby's heart was still beating. So I had to wait until I was in septic shock, literally on death's door, before my healthcare team could provide the care that I deserved and needed.
Zawarski said her medical emergency could have been avoided, and she only survived because of the eventual quick action of the medical staff. But had the proposed rules been in place at that time, she might not have made it.
The regulations you're proposing clarify nothing and only further complicate patients' ability to access healthcare.
Zawarski was the lead plaintiff in a lawsuit challenging Texas's restrictive abortion laws. Late last month, the Republican-controlled Texas Supreme Court unanimously rejected the challenge, ruling that the medical exceptions in the law were broad enough. However, the court called on the Texas Medical Board to issue guidance that would help physicians to understand when an abortion can be administered without breaking the law. But during the public hearing, there were many complaints.
I've reviewed the regulation, and in my professional opinion, y'all, they are not workable.
Dr. Austin Denard is a Dallas-based OBGYN who had to leave Texas to terminate her pregnancy because of a fatal fetal anomaly. She testified the proposed documentation requirements would make her job nearly impossible.
These proposed rules require me to consider many burdensome and, in many cases, impossible alternatives to abortion, all while leaving my patient's life at risk.
Dr. Todd Ivey, a Houston-based OBGYN who also testified last month, said he hopes the Texas Medical Board was listening.
This proposed rule change doesn't really clarify much for us.
Ivey said the medical board wants to hold doctors to the standard of reasonable medical judgment, but what that is isn't clear.
It should not be held to a standard of medical certainty, because it can't be. Providers may actually not agree on a single plan of action. It should not be limited to considering only adverse events that will happen without an action. It shouldn't require waiting until a mother's in imminent danger of death or impairment.
B. Morgan is executive director of Texas Impact, a religious grassroots network. She's calling on the medical board to give physicians the tools that they need to make the best recommendations to their patients, but she points out,
they can't change the law, and the law is what creates this incredibly narrow exception.
Any rules that the Texas Medical Board does eventually put forth could still face challenges. The ultimate test is, will Texas doctors get the assurances that they can do their jobs and save lives by performing medically necessary abortion without the fear of being arrested? Monday is the marking of the 2 years since the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to overturn the constitutional right to an abortion. Since that day, Texas has enforced a near-absolute abortion ban, meaning for many, if they want to legally and safely terminate an unwanted pregnancy or a pregnancy that threatens the life of the mother, they must travel out of state. And a new analysis by the Center for American Progress shows how dramatically longer it now takes a woman to access abortion care since the Dobbs decision. Nationally, travel time to access abortion care increased 300%, but it's even worse for women in Texas. Texas ranked third among states with the largest percentage change in driving times since the Dobbs decision, with an 869% increase, an additional 6 hours and 31 minutes driving time. To find out more, I spoke with Sarah Estep, the Associate Director of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress.
So we found that driving times to abortion clinics since the Dobbs decision have increased by 300% in May 2024 compared to August 2021. And so these drive times are now past the 2 hour mark in one direction nationally when we look at all of the congressional districts in the U.S. However, there are plenty of districts and states that have increased far more dramatically than that. So looking at Texas, the average drive time one way is 7 hours and 16 minutes. So that means round trip, you're approaching a 15-hour drive round trip to access an abortion. And nearly one in three women of reproductive age live in a state that has enacted one of the draconian abortion bans. And Texas is the second most populous state in the U.S., and it's home to over 6 million women of reproductive age.
So you found over 7 hours each way to access, on average in Texas, to get to a state that has abortion freedom. But you found there are congressional districts where it's much more than that. You have this very good interactive map. You can look at congressional districts in Texas across the country and get the idea of how long it is. And we're going to have a link to that on our website. But the worst one that I saw was with Texas Congressional District 15, which is represented by Republican Monica De La Cruz. It's the district that goes up to Universal City, out north of San Antonio, down to Seguin and all the way down to the Rio Grande Valley. So that is at 11 hours and 17 minutes as a one-way trip in order to get to a state where you can get a legal abortion. That's a long, long time. And you have to imagine, yeah, not only is it the question of time, but also having a car that you can drive for 22 hours hard driving through the West Texas desert. Not everyone has access to a vehicle like that.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, a lot of these women that are in the difficult situations where they're trying to make decisions like this, they already have kids. Like, so the majority of women who are getting abortions already have a child, and that means they're trying to figure out childcare also whenever they're driving this far. They're also taking time off of work. Like, if you have a 22-hour drive round trip, that's probably not actually happening in 22 hours. You're probably spending an overnight at that point. And you're probably taking time off of work because the majority of low-income women lack access to paid sick leave through their employers. So what happens is they're paying for gas, they're paying for food, they're paying for childcare. If they, you know, they might be needing to rent a car if they're in the situation that you're talking about. And that's, you know, all the non-medical costs. And there's also just the cost itself of the procedure. So we're talking about a lot of money here, and it's often really inaccessible for a lot of folks. And I think people hear the driving times and they think, okay, well, if they really want one, they can get it. They can drive and they can figure it out. But what folks don't realize is that, especially for people who are poor or young or women of color, one analysis that I often point to is by Dr. Caitlin Myers, who estimated that about a quarter of women seeking abortions in banned states are predicted to be trapped by distance and life circumstances. That's a direct quote.
I want to point out that if a person who lives along the Texas-Mexico border and their residency is in question and they have to travel through the border checkpoint in order to go further north, many people can't do that. Basically, getting to out of state to access abortion care is impossible for them because they can't get through the checkpoint. The other issue is, okay, on the other side of the Rio Grande, you have Mexico. And people don't realize that in the state of Tamaulipas, which is the other side of the Texas border, most of the border, abortion is illegal there. And so you cannot access a medical abortion in Mexico if you live on the Texas-Mexico border until you get to Coahuila, which is much further west.
Sure. I obviously cannot do this analysis on driving times to Mexico. My data are strictly for the contiguous United States. So that's what I'm modeling here. But, you know, we can think about how ridiculous is that a woman in a country, a developed country like America, would have to flee her country to access abortion. That's absurd.
Some people say, well, we have telehealth. They can access doctor's care and maybe get abortion medication through telehealth if they live in some of these areas. I do want to point out that in South Texas, along the border, it is one of the least connected areas for high-speed internet in the country. It's been estimated that only one in four homes has access to high-speed internet in these locations. So that is not an option to them.
Sure. And, you know, as we kind of think about mailing of abortion pills, and we have major decisions being decided at the Supreme Court about how women could more easily access abortion, it's going to be really scary. What scares me is the fact that you know, a lot of these MAGA extremists, they don't really care if you have a desired pregnancy and you get some kind of devastating news, like Kate Cox, for example. Everyone in Texas must know her name at this point. They don't care if you get the devastating news that the pregnancy you want is not going to happen with the birth of a healthy child, that as a result of a fetal condition that, you know, is going to result in death ultimately outside of the womb. And they don't care if your fetus has developed without a brain. And they really don't care if the continuation of the pregnancy will result in the loss of organs or even life. They really want you to be knocking on death's door, and they will be taking legal action against the doctors who are just trying to do their jobs. And so it's ultimately part of a much longer standing agenda to try to take away people's most intimate personal freedoms. And it can really be seen so clearly when we talk about and when we look at how they want to ban IVF and take away access to emergency contraception and make birth control more difficult for minors to obtain. And so, you know, restricting telehealth, making it so that women have to go in person to an appointment is just another way that they are trying to control people's bodies.
There is this concern about the growth of maternity care deserts. These are areas where you have to travel long distances in order to find a doctor who can give you good maternity care so you can have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy birth outcome. We're finding the growth of maternity deserts in the state of Texas. March of Dimes did the 2022 Nowhere to Go, a Growth of Maternity Deserts in Texas report. And it maps right on top of your reporting that you have about the increased distances, the length of time and effort that it takes in order to access abortion care. These things are directly related and are connected. Having healthy outcomes for people who want to have children is more difficult and more dangerous when you have abortion bans. Can you react to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, what we're seeing in Idaho is a clear example. When we restrict access to abortion and we start to criminalize doctors, doctors react as anyone would expect they would, and they begin to leave that state.
Sarah Estep is the Associate Director of the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. The article with their interactive map is Abortion Access Mapped by Congressional District, Center for American Progress. South Texas Congressman Henry Cuellar says he's being targeted by the Department of Justice. Cuellar was indicted on bribery and money laundering charges, but he continues to insist he's innocent and he is seeking re-election. Earlier this week, I sat down with the Laredo Democrat for this exclusive interview. Henry Cuellar has represented the 28th Congressional District of Texas since 2005, and he doesn't intend to stop despite his legal problems.
You know, my wife and I are innocent of the allegations that the government, Washington, D.C. prosecutors have made.
According to a federal indictment, Cuellar and his wife, Imelda, are accused of accepting almost $600,000 in bribes from Azerbaijan and a Mexican bank.
I did seek a legal advice before and two ethics opinions also, everything in writing before anything. And we tried to sit down with the prosecutors, but they didn't want to meet.
This was Cuellar's first one-on-one in-depth interview since his indictment. And he explained that he had followed congressional ethics procedures, but he couldn't address the contents of the charges or his defense.
So here we are, and I am limited as to what I can say, of course, but certainly at the time of trial and after we win this, we certainly will be talking about this a lot more in detail.
In the world of politics, Cuellar's indictments have been cast in contrast against the many legal problems and felony convictions of former President Donald Trump. The likely Republican presidential nominee has complained without evidence that he is the victim of a politicized Department of Justice. Some have used Cuellar, who is a Democrat, to make the point that the DOJ is nonpartisan since it goes after both parties. But Cuellar sees that differently. He says he could be the victim of a politicized Department of Justice who wants him out of Congress.
Let's look at a couple of things. Number one, the last time they did the search, it happened about 40 days before the election.
The FBI raided Cuellar's home in Laredo in January 2022, just weeks before early voting began in a tough primary where he was being challenged by progressive Jessica Cisneros. After a primary runoff, Cuellar squeaked past Cisneros by just under 300 votes. Now, 2 years later, a new election season, and Cuellar points out the DOJ comes with the indictments, which he says they deliberately brought out before this election.
My attorneys sat down and, try to sit down with them and ask them, can we wait? You waited 2 years. Can we wait after the November election? They didn't want to move forward. I certainly question their motives on that.
Cuellar said he thinks he was targeted by the DOJ because he is a conservative Democrat.
I think I'm the last pro-life Democrat in Congress, but I don't, I'm not one of those, I don't take an extreme position. I think there are exceptions for abortion.
Cuellar said he supports sincere abortion exceptions, unlike in Texas today where the exceptions aren't actually available. And he said people should be able to travel out of state for abortion care. He also said he's pro-Second Amendment, but he would vote in Congress for a bump stock ban. Last week, the Supreme Court struck down a ban on the rapid-fire devices.
I support the ban.
Another person who says Cuellar is being targeted by the Department of Justice is Donald Trump.
Even President Trump tweeted out supporting me.
On May 5th, Trump posted on Truth Social that President Biden is going after Cuellar because he is tough on the border. And Cuellar sees that as high praise.
I've been very strong on the border, and I've criticized the Biden administration with all due respect.
But Cuellar says Biden is finally catching up and securing the border. However, Trump praising Cuellar for being tough on the border makes it difficult for Republican Jay Furman to campaign against Cuellar in the general election using the border as an issue. The retired Navy commander now has the backing of the National Republican Congressional Committee to finance a challenge against Cuellar. Furman did not respond to requests for comment, but in an online video message, he highlighted Cuellar's indictments.
It's time for these guys to go. Time for the establishment to be put on their heels and pushed out for the corruption and for the attack on we the people.
Cuellar said he's not too concerned by Furman because he isn't from the border. And now that the trial has been moved to after Election Day, Cuellar said he can focus on his campaign and winning re-election. Each year, tens of thousands of unaccompanied children arrive at the U.S.-Mexico border. Most are coming up from Central America after a long and dangerous journey. But the motivation to leave their homes isn't always clear. Many children attempting to cross the U.S.-Mexico border are asylum seekers, left with no choice but to travel to the United States. We would like to share with you the story of one 16-year-old that recently made that passage and now lives in Texas. The story is told by his classmates at a San Antonio inner-city high school, but due to issues of residency status, were unable to disclose any of their names.
Hello. Today I would like to present to you a story about my classmate. He's a person who had to make a decision to leave his family for a better future and to be able to move forward. Many people do not know the effort that immigrants have to make to come to the United States to have a better life.
Cuando yo estaba en Honduras y tomé la decisión de, fue por un motivo, uno de los motivos fue por la economía.
When I was in Honduras and I made the decision, one of the reasons was because of the economy. I attended school in my country. I always wanted to study architecture, but there are no architecture programs there. And if they were, they were very expensive. And another reason is because of gangs. My house, my grandmother's house, is in front of the police post. So the gangs wanted me to tell them everything that went on and what the police were doing. And I told them I didn't have time because sometimes I worked and studied. Then they told me that they were going to take us from my grandmother's house. So I talked to my grandmother with my family, and I told them that I had made the decision to come here because the gangs threatening me, and they were not afraid of anything that would happen to them.
Tomado la decisión de venirme hacia aquí por la razón de que me estaban amenazando y que no tuvieran miedo de que no les iba a pasar nada a ellos.
I would like to give you another reason why people shouldn't judge immigrants. Not everyone who travels to a new country goes through the same situations.
Para, en mi opinión, sí es difícil tomar la decisión.
In my opinion, yes, it is difficult to make the decision to travel and immigrate to the United States because it is a very dangerous path where you risk your life, your health, and I would recommend that you always carry water and food wherever you go. And bring sweaters because sometimes it is cold in Mexico. And be very careful with the people who offer you a room because we do not know what they can do to us.
Mucho cuidado con las personas que les ofrecen dormitorio porque no sabemos qué nos pueden hacer.
Another obstacle was when he crossed the border and he still didn't give up.
Me pasaron cosas malas como me robaron.
Bad things happened to me, like they robbed me, they wanted to grab me. I don't know why, but I didn't let them kidnap me. Strangers who were in Mexico tried to do that, and when I was walking, they told me to go with them. Well, I wasn't going to go with them, because once they stole my cell phone, and they threatened me. Many people in Mexico threatened me.
Mucha gente me dijo de que el camino era muy peligroso, de que había personas que te secuestraban.
Well, many people told me that the road was very dangerous, that there were people who kidnapped you, who asked your family for money, who killed you, like the Zeta gangs in Mexico and other gangs. I saw many bad people. I saw members of the mafias in Mexico. I saw them in their cars, armed, and wearing hoodies, but they never did anything to me.
Mafias, yo en México, cuando venía en el camino, los miré en sus carros, armados, con capucha, pero nunca me hicieron nada. Realmente sí, cuando yo venía en el camino, yo pensaba en él.
I kept going, and motivated myself. I thought about my brother, but I never thought about returning halfway.
Pero nunca pensé regresarme a medio camino.
This is why people should understand why people immigrate. Today, he lives very well and with a better life. This is why today he would like to leave you with this message to reflect of the histories of the immigrants' journeys.
Si yo les pudiera decir un mensaje a ellos, yo les diría de que no deben de ser así porque literalmente.
Well, if I could share a message with them, I would tell them that they should not be like that. Because literally, we are all equal and we all deserve a new life. We all deserve the opportunity to be here. I know that not all immigrants come to have a good life. They become lazy or do bad things here in this country. And if they were in my country, they would know what it is like to live in my country. And they would make the decision to come here.
Y que si ellos estuvieran en mi país, ellos supieran lo que es vivir en mi país y ellos tomaran la decisión de venirse para aquí.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org, and you can download and subscribe to us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.